The Way to Emmaus. This way is our way. We are all on the way, being pilgrims, for we are wayfarers. Note that the only one of the two disciples is mentioned. Some say that is because Luke may have been the other disciple. I don't know. In heaven, you will know. But I don't think that St. Luke had yet arrived on the historical scene. Well, who is the unknown disciple travelling with Cleopas? It may be you. On the way to Emmaus, about 11 kilometres from Jerusalem, our Lord approaches these two disciples. God seeks out those who are sad and heavy of heart to console them. Yet how often people don't recognize him. How often we don't recognize him. Why don't we recognize him? We are like these two disciples. We let our hurt, our fears, our pain blind us from him. When we think that God does not care, he is really there. Mother Teresa, now Saint Teresa, could always see the face of Christ, the presence of God, in the poor and the unwanted. On the way to the village, when our Lord approached the disciples who were sorrowful, note that he asked them what was happening. "We hoped that it was he that should have redeemed Israel," they said. Before we want to teach someone or help them, we need to listen. So God listens to their trials and tribulations. Then, while walking alongside them, in order that they may be helped to see, to open their minds, he stops and calls them foolish. They, like us, can easily be confused and misunderstand the ways of God. Be not deceived. We are all fools before God. In order that they might see the author of truth, he explains his truths of the Bible to them. It's when they learned the sacred scriptures according to God's ways that their hearts thawed and their eyes gradually opened. He explained to them all of the prophets. How many Old Testament prophets were there? There are 17 prophetic books in the Old Testament, written by the four major prophets, Daniel, Ezekiel, Jeremiah, Isaiah, and the 12 minor. Of course, some of them were more prolific in their messianic references and teachings than others, such as Isaiah. Nevertheless, the Lord, quoting from here and there, exegetically piecing together the prophetic data, would have been truly illuminating. And as their minds were slowly opened to the truth, somewhat like the winding up of the blind to let in the morning sun, they felt within a longing for his presence. At the same time, they admitted that this caused their hearts to warm towards him. Truth is related to love. One is in the head, the other in the heart. We all know the saying, you cannot love what you do not know. Learning precedes loving. Have you ever wondered, though, what is greater, truth or love? It is a hard question to answer. One affects the other. They are both so important. One is the root, the other is the fruit. In this life, it is the root or truth that matters most. And for the next life, it is the fruit or charity. For you shall know them by their fruits. As the story develops, once their hearts are warmed by his holy word, and the day is far spent, they say, "Stay with us, Lord." It is then that they recognize the Lord. His presence is manifest. At the end of our life, when it is nearly spent, at our twilight, will we not also say, "Stay with us, Lord"? One person who helped many see the presence of God in their lives was St. Catherine of Siena, who was born during the outbreak of the plague in Siena in Italy in 1347. Catherine herself was a twin of a large family, but her sister did not survive infancy. Her mother was 40 when she was born. Her father was a cloth dyer. Despite Catherine's religious nature, she did not choose to enter a convent. Instead, she joined the Third Order of St. Dominic, which allowed her to associate with a religious society while living at home. Fellow Dominican sisters taught St. Catherine how to read. Meanwhile, she lived quietly, isolated within her family home. Something changed her when she was 21. She described an experience she referred to as her mystical marriage to Christ. Such mystical experiences do change people, and St. Catherine was no exception. In her vision, she was told to re-enter public life, to help the poor and sick. She immediately joined her family and went into public to help those in need. She often visited hospitals and homes where the poor and sick were found. Her activities quickly attracted followers who helped her in her mission to serve the poor and the sick. St. Catherine was drawn further into the world as she worked, and eventually she began to travel, calling for reform of the church and for people to confess and to love God totally. She became involved in politics and was key in working to keep city-states loyal to the Pope. She was also credited with helping to start a crusade to the Holy Land. On one occasion, she visited a condemned political prisoner and was credited with saving his soul, which she saw being taken up to heaven at the moment of his death. From 1375 onwards, St. Catherine began dictating letters to scribes. She petitioned for peace and was instrumental in persuading the Pope in Avignon to return to Rome. She became involved in the fractured politics of her time, but was able to, in restoring the papacy to Rome, to broker deals, which led to less conflict between Italian city-states. She is credited with composing over 400 letters, called her Dialogue, which is her definitive work of her prayers and communications with God. Pope Paul VI would declare her a doctor of the Church in 1970 for such writings. By 1380, the 33-year-old mystic had become ill, and she died on April the 29th. Her presence in Rome aided the Church. She brought people to see that God is beside them. May we do likewise, in some small way, bring the presence of Christ unto others.